Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey Podcast, by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David.
How are you doing, man?
Well, all right. It's July. My car is back in the shop. Third time in a month and a half. Could have bought a new car with what I paid to fix this.
Have you been watching the World Cup at all?
Yes, indeed. I sure have. There's been some great games, too. Man, oh, man. Exciting. Even the shootout yesterday was exciting, you know?
Yeah, what did you think of that?
I felt obliged to tweet afterwards. You can hate the shootout all you want. But one thing you can't hate the shootout for is lack of drama. It has drama. And I can think of any number of hockey shootouts that also had drama. So that in that respect, it delivers, you know, not all the time. Some shootouts are one team misses and then everybody scores and that's that. But this one yesterday, when England fell behind after three rounds, given their history of losing six shootouts to get knocked out of three World Cups and three Euros, and trailing then at that moment after with just two rounds to go, it looked pretty grim and turned around in a quick hurry. That was
It was very corrosive to British pride. I mean, they have all these movies, like they show James Bond able to do all, mm-hmm. like under intense pressure, do all these things.
Right.
And then the Kingsmen, you know, they can like kill 18 men with a hair clip or like a paper clip, right. But they can't score a goal in a shootout. Like, so it seems like the British cool under pressure was taking a huge hit with these inability to win a shootout game in international competition. So I'm sure that was a great relief to them. And now they can all pretend that they really are the Kingsmen after all.
And that aside, I enjoyed more the 90 plus minute game between Japan and Belgium, where the score went from 2-0 to 2-3 all in the second half. A very, very exciting game. That was the match of the World Cup so far, to my eye, day before yesterday. So Belgium, team to watch.
Brazil's going to beat them. All right, Bruce, let's talk hockey. We're sitting here waiting for the Carolina maybe to move Skinner and Falk. I'm saying they're moving to the Maple Leafs, but who have the cap space to do that and the prospects to get them. But, Bruce, let's talk
That's
Oilers.
An interesting idea, David.
Let's talk Oilers. It looks like they might be interested in one more forward. Peter Shirelli's talked about that. They'd have to sign a player, I think, on $1 million a year deal who can be buried in the minors on that $1 million a year deal and not affect the Oilers cap, because it looks to me like they're capped right out. Unless, of course, they move someone, which is always a possibility. They could trade a Strome or they could trade a Cassian. You know, there could still be a deal like that that could open up cap space. But it seems to me like they're down to a small list of players. And I looked at the TSN top 75 free agents going into free agency and who was remaining and who might make sense, as well as the list of players that Bob Stauffer has presented as possibles. And there's, I think I came up with eight names that still might be possible for the Oilers. The top name, the least likely because of cap space, they'd have to move out someone. That's Patrick Maroon. Anthony Duclair was next on the list. Maroon's at 13th on the list of most desirable free agents, according to TSN. Duclair's at 18. He's not signed. He's 22 years old. He had 23 points last year in 56 games. Scott Hartnell, 36 on the list and 36 years of age as well. 24 points in 62 games. Nick Shore, who's 25, 64 games, 18 points. Scotty Upshall, who is 34, and he's 67th on the list. He had 19 points in 63 games. Not listed mentioned by Stauffer are three players: Jason Chimera, who's 39 at 13 points in 74 games, Tyler Ennis, 28, 22 points in 73 games, and Lance Boma, 28, 9 points in 53 games. Bruce, I think it's fair to say that save for Maroon and possibly Duclair, all of those are fourth line guys for sure.
Yeah,
with Duclair and Maroon. So which, if you had to pick one guy on that list who you think the Oilers will sign, we'll do two things. Who will they sign and who would you make the argument for that they should sign on that list?
Ooh, that's a good question. A couple more former Oilers there to add, eh? Maroon and Chimera.
Chimera.
Yeah. And Yeah. And most desirable, you know, that's when you look at the whole package, Patrick Maroon's ask makes him undesirable. Full stop. He might be the most desirable in terms of what he could add to a team. But if he's going to add it at $4 million a year, that just is a no-go. It's a non-starter, barring, as you say, moving out a salary and opening a spot for him. So I think now you're asking me who I think they would sign out of that.
Who
list?
Should they? Who are you going to? We want me to start. Like,
yeah.
Okay, I'll start. And so you think this is the argument? Who should they sign on that list?
Okay,
and
I got a player for that. Then
go ahead,
Nick Shore, a 25-year-old right shot center. Play forward. He played on LA for almost 3 years, and then last year he kicked around to Ottawa and Calgary, neither of whom knew what to do with the guy. But he was a good player in LA as a depth player, basically a 4C, a right shooting center, average size. But he started in his own zone like 60% compared to 40 in the offensive zone, and his shots rates were all positive. And mind you, that is LA, which is pretty standard for that team. But the puck moved north, in other words, out of LA zone. Doesn't score a whole lot, 18 points in 64 games. I think he had 14 and 49 with LA or something like that, 15 and 49, point every three games. But on a fourth line forward, I mean, when your top line mate is Trevor Lewis, like how many points are you going to score? At this point, they're looking for guys that can go out and play and saw off so that their big guys that they're paying the big money to can win games for them without the bottom six losing those games. So you want break-even players. He does kill penalties a little bit. And, you know, 235 games of NHL experience, 25 years old, and he'll go for under $1 million for sure.
All right. I think that the best player easily on that list is Patrick Maroon. He was the best Oilers winger by far as a two-way player last year. It wasn't close. Nope. He's significantly, like sometimes some of the Oilers commentators talk about Maroon and Lucic as if they were close. It wasn't close the last 2 years. Lucic is a much inferior player to Maroon, and I doubt that's going to change. They're the same age, I think, close in age. They're both really on the downward side of their careers, though. You know, when you look at the scoring rates of players, how it drops after age 29, it's just like straight line, curved line down. And it's not encouraging at all for Lucic. People who think he's going to bounce back and be the player he was between the ages of 22 and 28, I think are really dreaming. And he's going to be, at best, I think, a third line enforcer. Hopefully he can get the job done on the third line. So Maroon will be a significant improvement over that. There's just not the money. But Bruce, I think he's at that stage where, like, there's a guy every year who slips through free agency and gets a hell of a lot less than he wanted. And I think Maroon's that guy this year. Chris Russell was that guy a few years ago. Mark Fain was like ballyhooed as the big guy 1 year, and he was going to get like a $4 or $5 million contract a year. I don't know. I think he got like maybe three over like a 1 year deal. These guys end up taking the 1 year deal at about $3 million, $3.5 million. Mm-hmm. I think that's where Maroon is headed, and I'd love to see the Oilers be able to afford that player because I think he could help. You know, I know the argument is he makes the team slower, but he's still a very effective hockey player. And the problem isn't Patrick Maroon last year. It was players like Lucic and Letestu who were just really overused and too slow in the roles they were using. So you don't have Letestu. Lucic, you can bump him down the lineup, and maybe that slowness issue is solved that way as much as anything else. So I'm not going to argue for Maroon, so I will argue for Anthony Duclair. He is 22. He scored 20 goals as a 20-year-old, I guess, in the NHL in his rookie season. He's had all kinds of issues, though, I think, getting along with his team. And that's why he's on his third NHL team right now. He was suspended a couple games in junior hockey for his attitude. John Chayka, when Arizona traded him to Chicago, he said he had this to say. John Chayka said, there's a lot of things that go into a trade. Some of them are readily apparent. You see Anthony play, and his speed and skill is obvious to everyone. There's some things that I think should stay behind closed doors. It was a long process. So essentially he's saying like they really didn't like this guy's personality and he caused troubles on the team and they couldn't, and that outweighed whatever talent they thought he had. And it looks like Chicago's come to the same determination, Bruce. So,
well, when you got that guy you're just describing, he's 22 years old and you can qualify him at 1.2 million. It's a no brainer 99 times out of 100. So this is the 100th percentile. What's with this guy that already Rangers were quick to trade him in his rookie season. And then the Coyotes moved him. Now the Blackhawks, like this is, he got a 23-game trial in Chicago. He was okay. Gone. It's kind of painting a picture, isn't it?
It certainly is. Nonetheless, I take the risk. I mean, the Oilers are there. Mm-hmm. You're trying to win a Stanley Cup. You need wingers who can score 20-25 goals. It looks like Duclair can do that. He's he has talent. Why not take the risk? Just send the message to him. Listen, buddy, this is, if there's any screw ups, if you're not on your best behavior, if you don't step up, you're gone. We're gonna send you to the American Hockey League like that. It's gonna, like that, it's over. So this is it. And if you come on those terms, you're welcome. We'll do everything we can to make it work with you, but you've got to step up. And maybe after your third NHL franchise, Bruce, he's ready to step up. And I think it's a risk worth taking. I mean, mm-hmm. all these other players, except for Maroon, they're not going to really help you that much. Nick Shore, he's good insurance in case Brodziak doesn't make it. But that's what he is. Right. Whereas Duclair could actually compete. He might be, if he worked out on the top line this year. And he might score 25 goals with Connor McDavid. I think that's the chance. You know, Al Davis of the Oakland Raiders, famous for saying, just win, baby. And he was taking in a lot of players who are hard to handle and hard to deal with. And, you know, you have to be open to that. I don't know if the Oilers franchise is, honestly. I don't think they're that. That's, I think it's unlikely they'll go for this player because of they don't seem to be have that mindset that it's okay to bring in that kind of player. But bring them in and take that risk. That's what I would do.
Yeah, they put this high value on character. It's kind of the rumble you hear out of, and we've heard out of the organization for years and years, and to their detriment at times, in my opinion, in terms of some of the moves they've made on based on more than what we see on the ice. Now, I mean, Anthony Duclair, I agree with you 100% in the sense that he's a guy that has to know at this point, like if Chicago by not even exercising that option on him at this point in his career, if that's not a wake up call, then he's in a coma. He's not just asleep. Right. And I mean, it's hey, Anthony, get your shit together, Anthony. That's, you know, I mean, if that's not a clarion call to him. But if you look at the player, I mean, jumping back to his rookie season that you referenced, Arizona Coyotes, he was 20 all year long. He was 20, 81 games played, 20 goals, 24 assists, 44 points, 49 PIMs, plus 12, best on the team. As a 20-year-old rookie, I mean, obviously anybody can put together, he obviously played well throughout that season. I remember him killing the Oilers on, I think, two different occasions in that season, where I remember Arizona had our number for like, it seemed like 6 years. It was, the Oilers could never beat the Coyotes no matter what. And Duclair was the, and Max Domi that year, they just stuck it to Oilers a couple times. So there's a player there. He's got worse since then. Like, he was better at 20 than he was at 21. And I'm not sure. I guess last year it was a slight bounce back season for him, but still nowhere close to 44 points.
He did have good luck shooting that first year, Bruce. He shot 19%, which is a pretty high, very high shooting percentage, right, for any player in the NHL. So, I mean, so the 20 goals is bolstered by that. But, that you know, that'll happen in players' good seasons. So I just think they should take the risk. The other guys on the list, like Hartnell, 36, Scotty Upshaw, 34, you know, they brought in Brodziak. They don't need, unless these players can, like Hartnell's slow, and Tyler Ennis, 22 points in 73 games. He's only 28. Bulma's 28, 9 points. I mean, these guys aren't exactly, I guess if, if you're just looking for fill-in players. But Shore stands out by far as the best of those kind of fill-in signings, because he's just 25, and he might bounce back and have a, you know, improve a little bit. That still happens at that age. So I of all those players, Shore does stand out the most to me as a good pick. And the other ones are pretty unexciting, to say the least.
Right. Well, Tyler Ennis, you know, there was a player there in Buffalo. He had three seasons of well over 40 points. Most recently in 2014-15, he had 46 points in 78 games. The next season, he played only 23 games. And I can't remember what happened to him. Obviously, it was a pretty significant injury or illness or whatever it was that limited him, you know, cost him 60 games. And since then, he's played parts of three seasons, 147 games, and the same 46 points that he scored. That's a combined total for three seasons compared to his last good season.
He's so, not been the same player after the injury. And I don't know the injury either offhand, but whatever that injury was, it's resulted in a significantly different player, it looks like. So, you know, I don't know. Like, it just doesn't make sense. So
he's an Edmonton native, a Medicine Hat Tiger, WHL boy. So you know that's the kind of player that's under the radar, on the radar of the Edmonton Oilers. You just know it because they always seem to be, you know, people know people.
How about this? The Oilers circle back to Duclair. They have a tough talk with him, and they say, listen, before we hire you, we want you to talk to both. You're gonna have a phone call with Connor McDavid. You're gonna talk to Leon Draisaitl. You're gonna talk to Milan Lucic and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. All the leadership on the team, the captains, assistant captains,
and I'd add Darnell Nurse to that list.
And Darnell Nurse, and you're gonna have a talk. You're gonna talk to each one of them, and then the GM's gonna talk to those five players, and we're gonna make a consensus decision. I'll get back to you at that point. And if Shirelli hears one wrong word, you don't circle back. But this is worth circling back on, a player of this talent, especially for a team like the Oilers. They made a good signing in Reeder, but this would be another really good signing. And if you're hearing all the right things from Duclair, and then you're also giving them the right message, like it's time. And if you're not ready, you're out. So Bruce, there was some hubbub, consternation about Jesse Puljujärvi this week. And it seems to be kind of a constant hubbub and consternation, because it's just the issues seem to be like, I see a really good two-way player developing there, but the usage of the coach and some of the verbal that we're getting from some of the Oilers insiders has been iffy, questionable about this player. So the latest was Bob Stauffer, who has been really patient. He's always compared Puljujärvi to Blake Wheeler, mentioned how long it's taken Blake Wheeler to develop as a player, years and years, and just give this guy time and he's going to develop. But then all of a sudden this week, Stauffer says, and quote, well, it's simple for Puljujärvi. If he doesn't gain some traction at some point, he may find himself having a new address, because I think the Oilers are going to have to make a decision with him. Because I think that Yamamoto, and you saw Yamamoto the other night in development camp, I mean, he dominated. And he has the confidence of the other players. And that was evident last year when he was up at the NHL as well. So, Bruce, when we look at Yamamoto, we see the coach picked Yamamoto over Puljujärvi out of training camp last year. The coach had Yamamoto on the power play. He had him up with McDavid. It was clearly the case that McClellan preferred Yamamoto over Puljujärvi. We also saw Puljujärvi get a shot with McDavid. But he was mainly playing with Milan Lucic last year. He didn't get any time on the left flank on the power play where Puljujärvi can really thrive. It seems like there's something weird going on here. What do you make of it all?
Yeah, well, last year, it's the nature of the rules make it tough for a fair evaluation of who was preferred between Yamamoto and Puljujärvi. Yamamoto got the first crack, but that was, I think, more because the 9-game trial rule, where once they sent him back, it was done. Whereas they could send Puljujärvi down, and I think they wanted to send him down, so they gave Yamamoto that early shot. And Puljujärvi and Yamamoto were never on the team together last year, because JP didn't get called up until well after Yamamoto went down, as I recall. I mean, it was close to it. Anyway, it was November 11th that he was his first game. So it was a sequential thing as opposed to, well, we want to try Kyler first because we think he's better. But, I mean, after training camp, they may well have thought that. And this year, they're both going to be pros easily. Either one can be sent to the minors or airlifted in the lineup. So it's going to be a much more a competition of peers, even though Puljujarvi's ahead of them in terms of experience. In terms of what the club's options are, they're basically identical with both players. And, I mean, Stauffer's tweet is such that if he doesn't gain traction at some point, well, yeah, you could say that pretty much about anyone. If he doesn't gain traction at some point, he's going to be gone. But the undercurrent is, well, when will he gain traction, and is it coming soon? And one would like to hope in year three he's ready to make that next step. But hope is the word, and it's not anything obvious saying he's there yet.
Well, he tracked when we look at scoring chances, and his contributions to chances and his mistakes on chances against placed him as the second best Oilers winger this year after Patrick Maroon. So, that's not saying a whole lot, Bruce,
Not with that group of wingers, it's not saying much. But anyway, it's better than being eighth.
It most assuredly is. And in terms of gaining traction, I mean, Matt, if you want to build up this player's confidence, yeah, why don't you put him on that left flank, left faceoff circle in the power play? Yeah. He has got a tremendous shot from there. He can make passes from there. And just tell him to shoot, shoot, shoot. He starts to score a few goals, get some confidence. That's what's going to get him traction. Why did the Oilers stick with Mark Letestu until February in that spot when he clearly wasn't scoring?
Because why did they were in a fight for the playoffs, David.
Why did they move to Ryan Strome after that? They have this player. You're right, Bruce. This is the thing. Like, they weren't going anywhere. Yeah. And yet they still didn't give him that chance. It was so frustrating. It was the second most frustrating on the team last year after them playing Draisaitl and McDavid together all the time and not giving Nugent Hopkins that shot. And talking, the trade talk percolating up about Nugent Hopkins when they had, because they needed a winger for McDavid and they hadn't tried RNH there. That was the most frustrating thing. And finally they did it. But they didn't ever give Puljujärvi that shot on that top power play. Very frustrating. And I think it's actually negligence on the part of the Oilers, if you have a talent like that, not to try him in his best place on the power play. Fourth overall pick in that draft, and you're not going to give him a chance to succeed as an offensive hockey player. I just think that's being a stumble bum at the NHL level.
And then you get this bullshit about, well, he's got to earn his spot up there. He's got to earn it. If you're going to put him in there, he's got to earn it. Well, guess what? You got Milan Lucic, who's got like one goal in his last 40 games, and he's still on the power play. Doesn't he have to earn his spot? Like, or is it because only young guys have to earn it, and the veterans get the benefit of the doubt regardless of performance? Like, there were some real inconsistencies in the deployment. I had big issues with the deployment last year, as you did, and on a number of fronts. I think the coaches had a bad year. And that contributed to the team's bad year. Moreover, they did not react to the team's bad year, as you say, in terms of using the opportunity of these games don't matter, so let's expose players to different opportunities. And, maybe with me, Jesse Puljujärvi, you could say they did the right thing by putting him on the third line where he's not playing the best of the opposing defensemen and so on. But get him out there on the bloody power play, the power play is last in the league. Hello, coaches, last in the league. Fix it.
Well, John Shannon said something very interesting about Puljujärvi, which I take, this is the verbal, because Shannon's around what's said behind closed doors. And he's saying that Puljujärvi was scared witless to play with McDavid and Draisaitl, that there was a real issue of this player's confidence. And so I like them on the third line okay, because I think if McClellan gives that player the message, okay, you be the guy on that third line, you carry the puck, we're counting on you to carry it. And we know there's going to be turnovers, there's going to be mistakes, that's okay. Carry the puck. Every time you get out there, you are the guy who's going to make a play on that line. You do it. And if that's the message, and I hope it is, I'm not sure that it is, but if that's the message, then I like Puljujärvi on the third line, because then he can grow into an NHL puck carrier and driver of a line, which I think he has the potential to be in that third line role. So I'm okay with that. The good news, Bruce, is that Shirelli, of course, he's responsible for that fourth overall pick of Puljujärvi. So he's got a lot riding on his success, maybe more than anyone else in the organization, but he's still firmly in Puljujärvi's corner. Here's what Shirelli said at his end of the year press conference about him. What I saw, a real rejuvenated offensive player when we called him up, a dangerous player. And then I saw a player who lost a lot of confidence in the end. Mm-hmm. I'll skip along here, but he's a terrific skater and he's going to be a real good player for us. So as a whole, yes, I'm satisfied. I know some of his counterparts at the top of the 2016 draft are doing better, but this player, this person, it's about the long term for him, what he's going to become in the long term, because with his package and his ability, he's going to be a really good player. So great to hear Shirelli say that. The vote, it's, you know, a very strong and a very sane vote of confidence, I think, in the player, a reasonable estimation of Puljujärvi, where he's at right now, because he did lose confidence. And that was troubling to me, like that he's with McClellan and he's losing confidence. It's up to McClellan to build up that confidence. But I think Shirelli's got it right.
Yeah. Scared witless, eh, David? You're being a lot more polite than I am today. Or is that what Shannon said?
That's what Shannon said.
Okay. Scared witless. Yeah, that's a new way of putting it. Anyway, it's very possible. I mean, it'd be pretty intimidating. Like, put yourself in the shoes of some big gangly Finnish kid that doesn't know how to speak English, getting airlifted over here into North America and put on a team with this kind of intense focus from the fans and media and so on, and not to mention bloggers. And also to, you know, with McDavid and all that kind of stuff, it would be an intimidating environment, and it's going to take him a little while. Now, the good news about this team this year, and this is pure speculation on my part, but I think it's an educated guess, that Manny Viveros will be given the Puljujärvi file. Because Manny Viveros, A, he left home and played his trade in Europe as a player he was over there for 25 years. He went over as a fairly young fellow. So he has the personal experience of playing in an unfamiliar environment. And he also has the coaching background and he has the history. I mean, he coached that young Finn in the dub last year. Who had such a good year. You'll know his name. You remember this guy.
I think it's Amenhotep, but I'm just making it. Okay. I think that's actually an Egyptian. Aki or something.
Yeah. He had an excellent year with Viveros. But I just think, just from what I've heard from Viveros and what I heard about Viveros, my friend Supernova is a big proponent of Viveros and has been for quite a while. And he's given a little bit of background. And he's just so, not just well-spoken, but I like the way he thinks. And I think that he's a nice secret weapon for Oilers to have with their young players. And if I have a beef about the Oilers organization, one of them has been its treatment of young players and not just the top young players and overusing them, but also just how they mix them in and get them involved. And I think I'm hopeful, at least, that Manny Viveros is going to be part of the solution to that, and Jesse Puljujärvi will be a test case. Boy, he'll be the poster boy.
Yeah, when I hear I think it's 50-50 on the coaches and the players' success. Stauffer's saying it's 75-25 in favor of the players' coaches. I think the coaches have a much bigger impact than that and can have a much bigger positive or negative effect. And we saw that with Ralph Kruger and what he got out of a lot of the young players like Yakupov and Peter Hall. And I think it's one of the real shames, the kind of like the unanswered question of the Oilers in this decade is what would have happened if Ralph Kruger had remained coaching? And me included, we didn't do enough to stick up for that guy and complain about him when he got fired. Of course, he was fired by then, so what difference did it make? But that was a huge mistake by the Oilers. They had a players coach, someone who could build up the players, someone who coached offense, someone who built confidence. I think we had that kind of coach in Todd Nelson as well. And it's up to this coaching staff, McClellan, to become that coach with some of these players, including Puljujärvi. And this is on the coach. Like, I don't want to see this, like, just all the blame thrown on Puljujärvi by insiders if he doesn't make it. It's an equal responsibility of the coach and the player to get the most out of this player. This is on McClellan, and he's got to do a good job of it.
And his staff.
That's right. Glenn Gulitsen, Bruce, also played a year in Finland as a player. So he knows what it's like to go to a country where he played in Finland. So that should also inform him in a positive way in terms of dealing with Puljujärvi. So, yeah, I think that there's some changes that are hopeful that might help things work out better for Puljujärvi this year. Not that it was that bad last year. I mean, he was 19 years old. He scored 12 goals, didn't get a lot of choice opportunity, played almost 500 minutes with Milan Lucic. When Lucic was in his terrible slump. And I don't think it was Puljujärvi causing Lucic's slump. It was Milan Lucic causing his slump. So that wasn't easy for Puljujärvi to log all those minutes with a guy where the play was constantly dying on Lucic's stick all year long. So
yeah. And he played with Strom, who had, other than one little hot streak, I think he scored 5 goals in 5 games, and he had these oceans of zeros on either side of that streak. And Puljujärvi himself had 3 goals in his last 34 games. So that third line, much as it looked like a decent set of sort of veteran NHLers for him to play with, they were all slumping badly. So it wasn't really panning out in terms of pucks in nets.
All righty. Well, maybe we'll have some news. Maybe we'll have some news with Nurse signing or Strom signing or someone else signing. But
what's your best take on the Nurse signing in terms of bridge or long-term and a dollar amount?
I think they should go long-term, but I don't think they have the money to it, to do it. I mean, I think you can go with fewer than 21 players on your roster, right? As the season starts, they could maybe find a million or two extra. Like I would love to see them sign Nurse long-term for about 4.5 to 5 million a year. I think in that range would make sense to me, but I think it looks like it's going to be a, 2-year deal, and it sounds like, you know, everyone's saying about 3 million, so I'm guessing it's going to be about 3.5 because everyone guesses low.
Yep.
So
generally speaking, that's what happens for sure.
Let's leave it there, Bruce.
Sure.
Thanks for talking today.
Yep. Thanks for listening and watching, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.